Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Morning. We're a few minutes early, so we'll get started a little after the top of the hour.
Okay.
Good morning, everyone. We'll get started in just a few minutes. We don't quite have quorum yet. I expect we're just waiting for people to switch over from the other meeting.
Hi, Chris. Can you hear me?
Hi, Steve. Yes, welcome.
Thank you. Cool. I was just all silence and I wasn't sure.
Yeah, we're just a little short of quorum, so we'll get started in a minute.
Great.
Great.
Hi, this is Ella.
Hi, Ella. Welcome.
Hi, this is Augie.
Hi, Augie. Let's see. Yeah, still getting a number of joins, so we'll give everybody just another minute or so. Okay, it looks like we're ready to start. Today we have a busy agenda. I have just a few announcements to get us started, and then we have two China Telecom proposals, and an update from the Tiger team on the target architecture diagram, and then a brief update from Bahara with the CHAP proposal, and then Lee Breslau from AT&T is going to give us feedback from operations. So to kick things off, thanks for all the comments on the white paper. I've sent them off to Linux Foundation, and they're processing an update. I'll share with you as soon as it comes back, and it should be relatively easy to finalize from that perspective. Also, Jason Hunt asked me to make an announcement. If you haven't already, please fill out the system architecture survey. And that will be very helpful going into next week. So let's kick it off now. I'd like to turn things over to Long from China Telecom for two proposals. They're presenting these to the TSC next week, and they would like architecture feedback. So let me stop sharing, and Long, over to you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chris, and I'm sharing my screen.
Okay, we don't see it yet.
Okay, just wait.
There it goes.
Okay. Hi. This is Long from China Telecom. Today I'm going to present to you two new project proposals called Service Capability Management and ONAP Benchmark. And we are going to also present it during the face-to-face meeting in California. And so as you can already see, we already upload these materials in the ONAP wiki page. And today we'll go through them for you. So for the first project proposal we want to propose, it's called the Service Capability Project. It provides highly identifiable loose coupling and ready-to-be-exposed service capability for ONAP SDC, SO, with user-friendly operator and level design time and running time environment functions. And the SCM also coming with a graphical user interface, that is the GUI, to present logical corresponding service capability list for the operators and end users. And the SCM provides capability encapsulation based on the microservice registered on the MSB. SCM functions also include design administration, classification, cataloging, coordination, version management, access control, presenting for the above encapsulated service capabilities. And SCM is facing service and the user level, while microservice is facing system level. And about the scope of SCM, it charges to provide available service capability registration into SC categories through corresponding API. And it also aims to charges to register SC. It's managed, exposed to users with different levels. And it also provides version management, and it's external service including drive service and routing service. And then is the high level architecture diagram for the SCM project. And as you can see, for the service capability management, it uses a three-layer architecture to manage the service instance information. That is, including the root, first level subdirectory, the second level subdirectory, and the service capability item are under the second level subdirectory. And the service capability directory and register items both adopt the system's coding directory in this form to identify uniquely. And the directory items are defined uniquely by the directory administrator. And SC items can implement new open and undo through the API after audit. And then is the inner workflow of SCM. And as you can see, it interface with many ONAP components, including the SDC, MSB, SO, ANAI. And then is the architecture alignment. And because we are proposing this project for the R2 stage, so we also guarantee features that meet the R2 spirit and requirements. That is, including the scalability, the security, and the stability for our project. And then is the specific SCM example for enterprise VCPE, and from which you can see many managed towards the service capability and the microservice. Okay, so this is the presentation about this project, service capability management.
Why do you have the directory structure that you do?
Oh, you mean the three-layer architecture?
Yes.
Oh, so this directory is aims to provide a more clear and useful directory for the users, because it is in the three layers, so the users will be able to find the encapsulated service more quick and more efficient.
But I still don't understand what each directory level represents. Is it just a tree hierarchy? Is that what you're trying to present?
No.
Services will have more than three levels of some services may have more than three levels of hierarchy.
No, this architecture is not refers to the specific level. As a specific service architecture, it refers to that we encapsulate those services into those categories. So it can, so it includes the first level and the second level.
So could you give an example of what would be described using this directory structure?
Okay, let me check.
And just to make sure I'm following, when we use the term service here, are you using it as like a microservice or as an SDC service that's being managed, or both?
Both. And
okay.
And we are going to encapsulate them, so for the users to better use the SCM system.
So this directory, if I understand it, is for external service discovery for the end users. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct.
But when you say external service discovery, you mean when somebody wants to know what services are available from ONAP?
It only provides the availability, but also exposed what resources corresponding to those.
Don't we already have that information available? Don't we already keep track of all this?
Yes, we already have some of the functions,
so
but it's not systematically. So what we want to do is to systematically encapsulate those services and into the this three-level structure.
What's architecture? I guess I'm trying to still understand the business outcome you're looking to enable with this. What would operators use this for?
I think it's very useful to end users and operators because it can present logical correspondent service capability list for those users.
So is this an operations view of the microservices bus of the services that are registered there?
No, this is customer facing stuff, I think, Chris.
Is this customer facing or operator facing?
Operators facing.
Operator
facing. Yeah.
But it's a view of actual service instances, not the microservices, right?
It also includes the microservice.
And I mean, maybe an example might help because I could think of at least two different interpretations. One would be you get service information such as this is a voice over IP service. The other level, and there are others too, but just as an example, the other level would be this is IP MPLS infrastructure on top of which is built voice over IP, on top of which is built a more specialized voice over IP capability. Are we talking about that, or is this supposed to be more of a definition of a product definition, if I could use that term? Maybe an example would help.
Okay, let's see an SCM example for the enterprise with PE. And as you can see, the first is the total workflow query, and the second is the task query. And you can see the SCM in that part. And what we are trying to encapsulate, including the service capability and the micro and those microservices. And as you can see, we also list those service capability and the microservice in this example.
You shouldn't be exposing, well, for the operators, I guess it's okay to expose the microservices. For the end users, you would never do that, right?
Yeah, this seems more like an external API
this is
what that we should have, and we already have some of this stuff represented through SDC, you know, as far as the service capabilities and service decomposition. We're working that model in the modeling group right now, so it's unclear how this, is this for instance, or is this in the catalog?
Really SDC. I was wondering a little bit the same thing because I thought it might be related to external, but now from the latest comments, I wonder if it's more related to the dashboard from the operational staff of the operator. But
it's unclear if it's external or internal usage. Yeah, and if it's external, we should always try to work through the external view of the service.
Well, this is the view, right? If you guys look at this view, it's clearly an operational view. But the question becomes... is this to create, you know, use case specific UIs, which we already kind of have an approach for, or
if it's the operational view, you know, that's part of what an AI should have, you know, so you have service inventory.
Well, yeah,
right, as well. But then you can assemble. I mean, there's also, you know, what's your static versus dynamic view of the service, right?
I think it's, if you look at the bottom two rows, it's doing both microservice and service capability. What you see in the yellow, the middle one, is more of external services, what a customer sees, and what you see at the bottom microservices is operator's view. It's trying to do both. And then it becomes overlapped with what external API is doing and what ORM is doing. So I agree.
Yeah,
that's what we want to see. How do we align? And does it make sense to combine these two, or should we keep those two separate because they are two different consumers?
They really are, and they're different views. Although they're related, they're highly related, but they're different views.
You can keep the same view hierarchy or the same view, but just limit what you see or constrain what people can see based on RBAC. But the view can be complete, right? It doesn't have to be different. It just, you know, may be constrained by what your privileges are.
But well, no, there's still this idea of abstraction, right? So you have the idea of what you're exposing as a service view versus what the resource view is supporting it that you might want to hide internally, right?
But all of that is still, you know, from an API perspective, all of that will go through the external interface. out to portals, right?
Yeah.
So it's just a question of what access you have to what data, right? So you mitigate that on the way out and on the way in. So some people will see all three layers, some people will see just...
I hear two discussions ongoing here. One is what's the kind of requirements and needs this is trying to solve in a way, which is kind of a little bit like a use case. And then the other discussion is this fitting into existing projects already, or is this a separate project?
Let's determine the use cases first, maybe, I guess.
Yeah, the same thing was running through my head. So thanks, Steve. That's exactly what I was thinking, is we need to have the use cases that show the context of what's trying to be done here.
Thanks. Thank you guys for your advice. And we will make... your questions and doubts more specific in the wiki, and we will then upload those into our wiki page. And because today we have another project proposal I want to propose, so let's first go through that project. Okay, so this project is called the ONAP Benchmark, and so first let's see the project description. It aims to provide function performance, scalability, security tests for the ONAP component module system level. And also it can find bottleneck for end-to-end system and making advice for corresponding module for code improvement. And it make test report for ONAP developer users for cooperator. And ONAP benchmark develops auto test environment and deploy auto test scripts use cases. So the reason why we want to propose this ONAP benchmark project is that because we think those capabilities are right now missing the ONAP, so we think it's very useful if we can provide those project. So then let's see the scope of the ONAP benchmark. It has levels including it has three different kinds of levels, including the component level, the module level, system level. And for the ONAP benchmark test, it contains a total four kinds of tests, including the functional test, performance test, consistency test, and a stress test. And then comes to the current resources and the scope for the R2. And as you can see, we have and those are the current resources available for this ONAP benchmark project, including the first seniors, those test experts. And the second is the labs with router, switch, and the WinWaves, and all those things. And the third is we have a 40 plus server, and we have more which machines. Yeah, and the public network IP address. And then is the specific test for R2. Right now, we list those tests into different test points, including the SO, SGNC, and the database. And for each test point, for example, the SO includes the workflow engine. And for the SGNC test point, includes the controller. And for the database test point, included the graphic database and the MySQL database. Then for the ONAP benchmark test KPI, we right now provide those KPI, as you can see in the page, including the query per second, single crest, maximum support, function points, maintainable reliability, recognition function. And then it's the architecture alignment. And we are going to, because it's a test, so we're going to put it here. And then it's the resources. As you can see, it can right now includes many contributors from different companies. And we are now perfecting this list, and we welcome all contributors you are interested in from different companies. Okay, thank you.
One question I had that I didn't, maybe you explained it, but I didn't quite get it, was, is this a project proposal to do benchmark testing, i.e. you take it from, you take it, ONAP, you do some benchmark testing and you provide feedback, or is this to produce a component that would help with benchmark testing?
Right now, it didn't make test report for the ONAP developer, or say users.
Okay.
Yeah. And
okay. Okay. So it's basically, if I'm working in MSB, or I just picked a project, and then you will be testing this and be able to help sort of give performance feedback to me. Is that correct?
Yes. So yeah.
I know. Okay.
Yeah, and I include many tests, function, performance, consistency, stress, something like that.
So this goes with the S3P discussion that we've been having, that this provides some performance benchmarking to help. I think that was the first layer of the performance threshold was to benchmark. So you know, I think this project could fit in there and help with that benchmarking for all the different components to drive performance down the road.
I agree, Chris. I mean, I think the idea seems useful and would be appreciated. My own main question is, how does this work with the integration project? Is this part of the integration project, or does it use the results of the integration project, or how would that work?
Right now we are proposing this project, and we are then in the later we are going to contact the integration group and to see what we can cooperate or say integrate. Yeah.
Did I understand that you've already had conversations with Helen on this?
Hello, Wanlong. This is Yan Chen, and I think I can answer this question.
Okay, thanks.
We have talked with Helen, and she supports that we can provide this kind of project. And I would like, I think we can put this project into integration team and into that project. Also, I think we can get output to integration team.
Oh, okay, so if I understood what you were saying, you felt it might be possible to include the scope of this activity in the integration project, which would actually potentially be an update to the definition of the integration project, actually. But that would be fine.
Yes.
Actually, a little bit correction for this. This is Helen. We're discussing if we go into integration project, it could be a sub project of integration project. It'll run independently, but it is a project.
Okay, got it.
Hello, Chris. Can I share my screen a little, because I have changed the.
Sure.
Change the PPT a little bit, and hopefully if I can share my screen here.
Sure, there you go.
Okay. Yes, this screen, we can find that the benchmark proposal to be part of a sub. It could be sub for dev. It could be part of the integration project. And also let me have a look at anything else. Yes, because I have got some feedback we deal with BCAE and VES. Yeah, I think the answer is yes. Maybe we could put this test into Beijing release. We can test the close the loop at any time of VES. I mean, the performance of the CAE. And also about the input and output, if we can get an ONAP end to end, when the use case deployed, then we can give a full testing report about targets at R2, release 2, and also we can make some automated test scripts. So we can contribute this into our proposal to the community about the tools that we will use, including the PCL and also framework we are using includes a Rafa framework. Things we haven't discussed it with the other campaigns at the moment, so we welcome all the other campaigns to take part in this project.
I think it's good. And I think it's good if it's a sub-project in the integration project. I think, Chris, formally we need to double-check whether we need to actually update the definition of the ONAP, of the integration project to reflect that as well.
So it depends on how we go through it. The way I read it is that the charter allows for umbrella projects. So what might be cleanest is to run this as a new project proposal and just declare that it would go under the integration umbrella.
But that means we have to define the integration as an umbrella. I don't think it is today. That's what I mean.
Oh. Yeah, I think we can work through the logistics of it. I think that could probably be handled in one project proposal. Just to say that we think integration is an umbrella, it has its own scope, and then here's a sub-project that could click in. But I think we can talk through the logistics next week.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you very much for the presentation. Let's see, the next topic up is the target architecture diagram. Parviz?
Yeah, sorry, I was mute. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Yeah, you can hear me, yeah?
Yes.
Okay. So, I can share my screen. Is that okay?
Please.
Okay, so Chris, what we did, this is the architecture that's currently in place for Amsterdam release. So all the color scheme that you can see here, I borrowed from this picture and moved it into the new architecture. So you have seen this before. This is the published architecture for R1, okay? Mm-hmm. So the idea is, if you look at this architecture, it looks like the R1 with some new, additional components. The changes from last time, you see we added a few items that actually we have. First of all the color scheme changed. There is this the data collection, the DCAE, which I guess it was last time already a part of the architecture. Now we are going to use the component associated with DCAE. I believe that the path arrow, the blue arrow in the lower left part of the diagram, that now has to show some new components. For example, the recipe and engineering rule and policy distribution. There was a comment that the PNFs, they should be off the area that the hypervisor operates. So on the lower part on the right, I moved the PNF outside the domain of the hypervisor. That was a change in this architecture. The other thing except the color change, I guess there was also a comment from Hobbing this morning that the external gateway should be somehow linked to the MSP. So I show it in the next picture, I guess. The adaptation layer is consistently used. We have for generic NF controller. Thanks, Steve, for making that suggestion. Now it's not only limited to VNF, the generic NF controller, which includes both VNFs and PNFs. Then the adaption layer, I added for SDN controller that makes it consistent with the other two that we already have it for multi-cloud adaptation. There's an infrastructure adaptation layer. For external system, I believe it was a dangling like entity. Now we put them together. Even in R1, that doesn't is not there. So now they are basically belong to the same system. But as you can see, the vertical box, the gray box. The ONAP target architecture now it shows the high level functional view, which was missing in the last version. What else? We are showing OSS, BSS, CLI, and ONAP portal. So this is pretty much now nicely aligned with the R1 architecture. I believe that I captured almost everything here. Of course, Steve also did some of the editing. Thanks, Steve. Is there any question on this one? Then I move on to the next one.
Pavis, actually, I have one question because you specifically yes. mentioned that PNFs is not included. I'm not sure exactly mean because from my point of view, later OLAP could also manage the PNFs is important, especially like AI. Right now, AI don't have a capability to or some other modeling PNFs. That's why when we really implement our use cases, we have to do a lots of hack. For example, wrap the PNFs into VFs and also something like that. So I'm not sure what exactly you mean, this PNF.
Yeah, look at the network.
But that's target, Helen, that's target. Hello. That's want to go to support PNF fully, including STC, SO, and ANAI, and everything we have.
No, that's one point, Vimal. I guess Helen's point is the network function layer in the previous version, it was overlapping with the lower layer, which is the hypervisor. The hypervisor doesn't handle PNFs. So I made the box shorter to keep PNF outside the domain of hypervisor, okay? You see that the shorter box for hypervisor, it doesn't include the PNF. In the previous version, the PNF was also included as part of the hypervisor. This picture now excludes that. You see the PNF versus hypervisor, the last two layers? So now PNF is not really extended. The hypervisor is not extended to include PNF, which is technically correct. So we made that change.
That's what you mean.
Yeah, that is the clarification. And Vimal, you had a point, Vimal?
I was just answering Helen's question that we don't have full support for PNF, and we know that that's a gap that we are trying to...
Yeah. I don't think this, I think we need a slightly different way of representing this, hearing all the comments, and here's why. If we look at the information model layers that we've been trying to insert and inject into the architecture, there's a layer of actual kind of real physical infrastructure that is at the very bottom, and there's a lot of information associated with that. The VNFs themselves are really at the application level. That's what we call them, applications. And so showing them on the same level as a PNF is wrong, right? You know, we know that the PNFs are going to be at the same level as physical servers or storage devices or physical network equipment, right? And so there's maybe two other layers in between that and the VNF, and we need to show it in maybe in a slightly different way.
It depends there, I think, because if you have a PNF that's a radio base station, it's the same level as a VNF from that point of view.
Functionally, one way to address Alex's comment would be to extend the PNF down at the same layer as the hardware, and it goes all the way. That means the PNF covers both hardware, the OS, and the application layer.
That's that's not a bad idea, Vimal, actually. No. That would work.
So why don't we take this offline to the Tiger team call? I think you have a call on Friday?
Yeah.
One clarification that, Alex, you're right, but we can talk about it on Friday. I have some clarification. For now, I guess we have limited time. You're right. The VNFs are like a V router. versus virtual firewall. We are showing the vRouter version of VNF here because it's a network function layer. And then as a part of the application layer 4.7, virtual firewall, yes, of course, that is a part that belongs in a different layer. We can talk about it on Friday, okay? All right. So the next one. Okay, Chris, this is work in progress. I try to kind of start from the R1 architecture with projects as part of showing the picture. This is pretty much what we have in R1. This has not been completely reviewed with the Tiger team, but here is the point. There is nothing new here except that in R1, as you can see, the interaction between the service orchestration layer, which is now is a project, and the VFC is a direct interaction. It doesn't really make any use of either a DMAP or nothing. It's just a direct interaction in the implementation in R1. Now, hold on. I'm showing that as that double arrow, the red line, and this is, I put a note 2 there. It said the service orchestration VFC interface needs to be enhanced to support carrier grade requirements. Now, in R1, the reality is R1, the code is there. In R2, of course, we aim to bring the carrier grade basically features and capability into the platform. And we definitely need to enhance that interface, which is shown with the red line. So let me leave that to the way it is. It's a red line between the service orchestration project and the VFC. The rest of this is pretty much similar to what we have in R1. There are some minor changes that we moved the common services on the right, the ONAP operations manager, that is a bit more inclusive in R2 than R1. We borrowed the color scheme from R1 here. There is this ONAP API, now it's overarching across the board for all the components in ONAP. I showed the external gateway. Now, Hobbing has a comment that the external gateway is also relevant to the MSP. So we need to somehow indicate that that relation is there.
We need to discuss that because earlier we said the external gateway was outside ONAP. Now we're saying it's part of ONAP. So I'm a bit confused about that comment. So I have an email coming.
So I think on that front, before we start an email discussion, there's a little bit of a confusion in terminology that we use. When I read Huabing's email, I think what he's referring to is the API gateway. He calls it something else, and that clashes with what we're calling the external gateway. And so we just need to describe what these things are, and I think we have no more disconnect.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen the same thing. So this is a discussion we maybe want to have, guys, on the Tiger team call.
Okay, guys, one thing that even Steve mentioned, thanks, Steve, for echoing my concern. We have a habit in ONAP that we wait for the weekly call. But the email discussion really helps to have a timely resolution of some outstanding issues. An external gateway, we can start with that. We can engage in more email discussion on this between now and Friday. Friday is the Tiger team call. Okay. So on this picture, if you have any questions, please speak up.
Hi, this is Fabian here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So
Fabian, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't manage to attend the last Tiger team meeting. It's a little bit late for me. And I'm afraid I can't attend this week's meeting as well because I might be in the plane to travel to the US this weekend. So here the Xtro Gateway, I think Xtro Gateway is used to expose the applicability, like the microservice endpoint, our NAP system to Xtro system. So that's what I understand the meaning of Xtro Gateway. So if that's the functionality of Xtro Gateway, so it's similar to the external API Gateway provided by MSP in Amazon release. So these are functionality of this external gateway. So if we I think maybe we can discuss by the in the mail. So everybody can.
So this is now in the technology.
Yeah.
I just changed the color. I guess Steve already mentioned that. We are not going to use the same color as an external component like OSS, BSS. I just changed the color to blue, which means that it's not anymore. External gateway is not anymore an external entity. And then the question is for Andy, if we do the orchestration federation and we have an external API, then we need to make that decision between now and Friday that how we are going to accurately capture that external API, external gateway, whether it's in scope or outside scope of ONAP.
I think we already kind of said it's in scope within the ONAP API focus, right?
Okay.
So, and we have the idea
that is a part of the big ONAP APIs, yeah?
Yeah, so the big ONAP APIs expose the external facing view of ONAP as a black box, be it
that's
to BSS OSS or be it to partner providers through the external gateway.
Okay, so then changing the color scheme, if that would do it, so be it. If not, please send email. The email discussion really helps.
Right, but maybe the external gateway can sit down. You know, maybe there's no line between. Maybe it sits on the ONAP API, right? Because it's kind of
okay.
Part of it.
Right. I don't want to make the change on the fly. Yeah.
Yes. We'll have some email discussions and talk more on Friday.
Okay, please.
It depends what it is. It depends what it is. I think that's what has to be clarified first.
Yeah. Well, it's a definition.
So
maybe we all have a different definition in our minds. So yeah, having a clear context scope would help.
So I think internal API and external gateway are two components, if I understand correctly. External API will provide the API which inconsistent with some standard. And this kind of API will be registered to the gateway to be exposed to a Gitro system. So this should be two components.
Okay, how big? Can we wait between for the email discussion for clarification? Because, Chris, I only have like 30 minutes. I hope that I can finish it within the 30 minutes, yeah?
Yeah, I can actually give you a little bit of time. We're running a little bit ahead of schedule this morning, so if you need a few extra minutes, you can take them.
Okay. So, last comment, Harbing, you wanna follow on what you said, or you? Sorry, I cut you short.
If I understand correctly, we still need to add another block in this diagram. The external API component.
Yes, we do need to add in all the microservice-centric kind of infrastructure. That's a more detailed view that we're going to work on next. But you're right that in general, we have two different things we're calling gateways. One is at a much higher level than what you using your gateway for, one being, and we'll adjust it. We'll figure it out.
Okay. So I'm going to call you guys, Alex and Harbin, for clarification. And once we have a very firm kind of proposal, we share it with the team. Or we can send just email and see if we take it from there, okay?
We'll do both, but okay. We'll come up with something. We need to move the microservice work ahead anyway with why being free now, so.
Okay, sure. So, Chris, that as far as the architecture goes, these two diagrams should be good enough with some, I don't know, the only open issue is this, how to reflect the external gateway here. This should be ready, if you cross your finger, for your presentation next week, Chris, okay?
Thank you, Parviz.
Parviz, I just have a question. On this picture here, this is the R2 spin-off, right? This hasn't really been discussed, and you just say it's work in progress, so that's great to have a starting point then. But how far can we go in sort of representing this in terms of what we said towards the R2, for example? We have the NFVO where we should align with the orchestration. Can we put those together? And we have the VNFM aligned with that's remaining there of the VFC. Can we show those? I can make a proposal along this, but I guess we need a bit of discussion.
Okay. We have, this is a follow-on. We have planned to talk to the PTLs this week. Actually, this is going to be hopefully tomorrow. I want to get the PTL's view on how to really bring the NFVO out of the VFC box, because today that is all basically clubbed together within the VFC. Now, if there is minimal changes to the code, and yet you can you can show NFVO and expose the interface between NFVO and VFC, I want to make sure that the two PTLs, the SO PTL and the VFC PTL, they agree to that. But that is a decision that has to be made, because any extra work for the release 2 with regard to generalizing this picture has to be justified. And we are running a very tight schedule and probably lack of resources. But technically, as I said, that red line, we have to work on this to make sure that we can enhance the functionality of the interaction between the orchestration layer. Specifically, it would be the how NFVO and the SO, they interact. And on top of that, then you need to also address the NFVO and VF's, the general VNF manager. And if there is a need to show that in the picture, we need to get the buy-in from the PTL, okay?
Right, but this picture is supposed to tie into external, tie the architecture to projects, correct?
Yeah, we need a different, we still need a different view and of this before we show it to a large audience, I feel. This is still business as usual kind of view, just a slightly different, well, not slightly, but, you know, with some variations, it's just still another kind of top level kind of view of what, you know, it's Amsterdam plus plus. It doesn't.
Alex, look at the work in progress. This is like a straw man proposal for R2, the project view. I didn't mean that to share this with a bigger crowd, but this picture is here. You have time to really shoot at this picture with all the power that you have. Between now and Friday, hopefully, we have a target that we can discuss and make a decision, okay?
We can certainly try, right? I have a slightly different question that was asked before, yes. Related though, right? So Chris, some of the outcome, well, one possible outcome here from looking at this is that there's some new projects or some additional projects or changes to what we have already that need to get spun up.
Yes.
You know, the assumption has been that we first kind of agree on the target, you know, view of the world and back off and say, this is what we're doing for R2. Those projects have not been filed in time for the deadline, as far as I know. So how do we handle that, right? You know, we had a deadline of 11:30, yet there are some things lurking here that have not been submitted as project proposals because they were still being debated in the context of this.
Yes. That's the reason that we, the date for us to take this diagram or the set of diagrams to the TSC is M2, is in February, so that there is time to make updates based on what gets approved, you know, over, you know, next week and beyond. You know, if this has all the projects on there that have currently been approved, I think this is a good start, and then we could augment this as new projects get approved within you know, the next couple of weeks, and then lock it down, and then have time to finalize it before we take it to the TSC in February.
So I have a
question. Parvis, I recommend changing ONAP APIs to ONAP external APIs. So I'll send you an email on that because it does need to tie to the project.
So we have presentations, Parvis, where we have all these distinctions kind of shown. Maybe we can take one of those arc diagrams and incorporate them in here.
Absolutely, yeah.
They're already published, right? So all we need to do is just cut and paste. The other thing, I want to echo what Andy is saying, right? This is still a very much a project kind of centric view of the world. And we need to get to functional, right?
We need a set of diagrams.
So this is the Beijing diagram, right? So then we have a target diagram as well.
Yeah, that's the one that I think Parvis showed before.
Yeah.
There's the high level target. The functional view, and then there's a project view. And I think we need both when we share this with the community. You know, I like all the work that you've been doing on this. I want to make sure it's reflected. So definitely provide feedback as necessary, because we want to be clear to the community, you know, where we're going and essentially some of the steps to get there, you know, from an advisory role.
Could
I ask a quick question? Since this is the Beijing architecture, for the design time, the change management design, what's this block mirror to the project? I look at the existing project and the new proposed project. I don't find a map.
But that's what I was asking. Yeah.
Hold on. Helen, the change management design already exists. This was a question that I was going to bring up, whether this is a committed project, is already decided. This is a point for Chris. Is that change management design is going to be stay in R2? Is that correct?
It's a proposal at this point. It's not approved.
I saw a project called some kind of change something proposed to me, but it was withdrawn. So that's why I'm asking this kind of question.
Yeah, you're right. This is, I wanted to keep it here because there are other projects, I guess Alex or Andy mentioned. The other project, maybe the ARC subcommittee, Chris, you put a deadline for the projects that are in or out of R2. Do you have a deadline for that, Chris?
Well, we know. Let me take it. So the TSC is going to be voting on new projects next week. I don't know if we'll get through that whole list then, but I expect that we probably will before Christmas. We have the M1 date, which is January 18th. Everything has to be decided by then. I think we will have most of the answer by the end of next week, but there may be some refinements that come in up until the middle of January. And so we do want to start locking down after the developer summit next week. But I understand we may need to make some tweaks going up to M1. And then from M1 to M2, then it's about polishing the diagram before we take it to the TSC. And if we're ready before that, we can take it early.
M1 is projects the planning done, right?
So planning done, January, yes.
The projects must be known and the planning must be done.
But this is Dan. One point I just want to make sure that I make is that if any of these new projects introduce new interfaces to existing projects, we're going to need those before January 18th, right? Because by January 8th, we'll have our scope.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. It's a very good point because you can't do your planning if you don't know the impacts.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that's the reason that we're doing the approvals for the new stuff next week for the project, so that we do have that time to plan.
Okay.
Yeah, but we need Chris, of course. If you pass the short list of the new approved projects, then the Tiger team would take it from there to see how to accommodate those projects into this architecture framework. Yeah.
Great.
Okay.
Yes, I want to make sure one thing, right? So, for example, the microservice design pattern work, the domain controller, was not submitted by 11:30 because we thought that would be dependent on what we do here. So we need to discuss what that means, right? The intention was to incorporate it into this architectural view, not submitted as a brand new project. So we need to figure out what, how to bridge the gap there.
Yeah, okay, Alex. I guess you're on the hook to work with Hobbing and the team. I hope that you have something to share by this Friday, correct?
We already have all the diagrams. They just need to be pasted in here, right? Okay. So, but that's not the question. The question to Chris is, there were some projects that were left off that were not done intentionally. Like the multi-domain controller that Ramesh and I were proposing, we didn't actually submit a proposal by 11:30 because we knew that changes would probably have to be, you know, made and would have to be adjusted depending on what we decide here, right? Mm-hmm. But I just want to make sure there will be an opportunity to submit proposals for those kinds of projects in the future.
There will in the future.
Well, future meaning R2.
Well, so R2, you got to get it in by next week. I mean, that's from the TSC that we're doing the voting on the new projects next week. And as Dan mentioned, this is because of the dependencies with everything else in the planning cycle. And if you don't have something at least, you know, in the queue and reviewed by then essentially it becomes an R3 project. But it's not that you have to wait until May or June to put it in. It's just that it wouldn't be delivered in the May timeframe if you don't get it in early. The TSC can vote on exceptions, but I would expect that it would be harder to do the later you go.
So basically, whatever result, whatever falls out of these discussions is not likely to be included in R2.
Well, unless you hurry, you put in the best you know, and then you adjust the scope accordingly.
Got it. Okay. Okay.
Okay, folks. Any other question on this? This is a moving target. It's not debated yet. We need to bring the PTLs and get their views on this, okay, on the project view. So can I move on to the next page? Okay. The next one, there were some changes. I guess primarily Steve, you're proposing that, for example, we add the LCM, you know, on the second bullet, instead of like saying just instantiate, modify.
The changes were tried to be consistent and complete, not just to instantiate. Yeah. Otherwise, people receive the impression that, oh, no, it's just we're instantiating something. And
Yeah. That was agreed, as far as I know. So thanks, Steve, for a very consistent change to include service configuration, LCM. There were like missing some of those points here and there. So if you have any, when you review the next set of slides, please have a look at Steve's contribution. We agreed that those are good changes. So there's some update here, some update there, install and configure. That configure is new based on Steve's comments. And then there are a few other places, for example, the managed, so-called the managed environment, all the services for the managed environment. Actually, I didn't have enough time to talk to Steve. As a team, do we agree that we need to include services from the managed environment? I guess we did, yeah? So I already put that change in. Services from the managed environment.
Steve, that was one of your comments. So
yeah, let's take this as the baseline.
Yeah, to the target.
We have comments. Yeah, and then we always comment on the baseline.
Okay, and then there is pretty much some small changes here and there. No comments on the service decomposition. Oh, again, the box with the yellow highlighted. My understanding is that
we didn't agree.
Steve, we have some of the the specs are a work in progress. So we take it in the Tiger team. Do we need to reference those or not? The sole specs. So that's the reason I highlighted in yellow.
Okay.
And the next thing is role of the controllers. And I added some explicit reference to the architecture principles on the wiki. I have a set of comments from Nigel if you look at the agenda for Friday. So Nigel is making some changes to the set of principles on the wiki page. Please review that before Friday. Chris, we are fine here. I guess people are agreeing that this is it. So the question is on this one. In the architecture team, we are going to redo this to remove OSS and add some other components. I guess, again, this is open to contributions. Between now and Friday, we should be able to update this figure. But this is from Mopeng proposal, okay? The Mopeng contribution. What else? Okay, there was a point on the creating a small team. We added the SO, and the SO PTL has to be engaged in this discussion for sure. Again, thanks, Steve, for that suggestion. As I said, the next step for the Tiger team is to have this joint session with the PTLs and the people that are interested to work on the next phase of the project mapping. Okay, this is work in progress. The detailed view. So, by the way, Chris, you don't want to include the detailed view next week, correct? Are you planning? The detailed view is all the subcomponents you see. For each component, there are subcomponents, the internal components. You see in this picture is quite
yes.
cluttered.
Yeah, I wasn't planning to talk to this next week. I was planning to talk to the ones that were a little bit more solidified, the high-level target, and then also the project view, because we need to present some clarity on what we're expecting, at least from what we know today. And I'll put a big disclaimer on it that it'll be updated once we have done the new project approvals.
Okay, we try to follow up on this in the Tiger team. Folks, please come prepared and put your darts against this picture here. Bring your comments, okay? So the other thing is the Orchestration Federation. Andy submitted some of the high-level requirements, and then there is no follow-up so far because Andy is busy with the external API project. So I'm hoping that between now and Friday, Andy and Team Alex and others, they have something to cover those interfaces, interlude and
I sent you some updated slides last week, but we can make sure they get. I'll put them into the context of this deck. So that way they're...
Okay.
Given that we don't have a lot of time, can we just, instead of sending email slides, can we just create a little workspace somewhere on the side so we can all leverage the slides and adjust the...
That form. Would help.
Yeah.
Again, if Chris brings a short list of projects and external API is a part of that, we would love to have a set of requirements and a functional description of the interactions, okay?
Yeah, so feel free to set up a page on the wiki.
Yeah, okay. So this is work in progress, Chris. The next one is Vimal submitted this set of slides for a detailed functional description of the components.
he presented. At some point, Vimal presented the next set of slides that you can see here. And there are some questions raised by Steve and some other folks. So I don't want to burden the ARC meeting with the details, but this is the current state of the work. Everything that is pushed into the back of slides, that means that it is work in progress. And there are proposals, contributions, and comments against those proposals. And finally, I guess we have Ramki, waiting for Ramki to give us the slide on the multi-cloud for R2. Chris, that is all it.
Great, thank you. Appreciate the update, Parviz.
Sure.
Great. Next is Bharath with CHAP.
Hi, Chris. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, so you guys have seen this presentation before and I have spoken about it. So before going into the details, one of the main concerns that I have, and Nukris also raised this in his feedback that he sent to me, is that currently we have resources within AT&T who are willing to commit to this project, and sufficient resources that can not only make CHAP more robust, we are already working on it, but also interface with the different ONAP component teams like SDNC or APSI or MSO to try and see if these components can use CHAP effectively. But we are missing committers from other companies right now, and at least we would like it to be a truly collaborative effort. So if people can send me a mail who are interested, that would be great. I've already reached out to several of you who have shown an interest in this project in some capacity. But I would again like to reiterate that if you guys are interested, please do reach out to me, and we can work out how such a relationship would work. So Chris, one question I had regarding that is, what is the deadline for the submission? Because we will have a representative of from AT&T representing CHAP, Brendan, who will be there in the developer conference. So, like, do we have until like Monday or Tuesday, or would you like this submitted by the end of this week?
You've already submitted it because it's on the wiki. Expectation from the TSC is that you update it as needed to tell the presentation. So if you can get new people to sign on, you'll reflect that as soon as you get those commitments.
One clarification, of course, Chris, is being on the wiki is not enough. You actually need to send an email to the TSC requesting a proposal of a new project.
Yes, that's what I thought.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. And but I guess we can keep editing the wiki, you know, as and when we get new committers with the project. Okay.
You can keep editing it till it's approved.
Okay, that's great to know. Then I'll wait with bated breath till 15th night. Okay, so I received a lot of feedback over it. A lot of it was positive, but do you guys just let me just go through the basics, but then I'll open it up for questions very soon. So the basic goal of CHAP is to provide this high availability platform, and There are actually three components, primarily two components, but effectively three, in the sense that CHAP has two basic functions. One is to ensure that state is available across geo-distributed sites and update to the shared state can be done in an efficient manner. That's one aspect of it. And that is handled by Music. And Music is this distributed key value store that combines a locking service to provide flexible consistency access. And then we have this MDBC piece, which at its most basic level can be looked at as a way for services that write to a database, like MSO, for example, to avail the benefits of Music without changing their SQL code. So we can look at Music MDBC together as the state replication piece. But CHAP is also more than that. It also has HAL, that is more used for service resiliency. One example is that when HAL initially began, when we were doing work at AT&T, one of our main goals was at the time to build active passive systems. So HAL would also would perform the role of acting as a companion to each replica and performing, if one of the replica goes down, then among the remaining replicas, they would perform leader, the HAL would help them perform leader election among each other and then perform failover. So there are these two distinct components that CHAP provides, the state management part and the service resiliency part. Now the design of HAL has evolved even more to support active-active resiliency and not just be for active-passive, but just wanted to differentiate this piece, you know, especially in answer to Srini's question that he raised pretty recently in the comments. So one thing, I've shown two diagrams here for the usage. One is just a generic one for that is applicable to any ONAP component. Some things that needs to be remembered here is that this is just an architectural suggestion. There is nothing preventing three replica ONAP components on the same site. That's a design decision that people can take. But we believe this is a common design pattern where there is one replica within a site, but if the entire site goes down, then you move to another site. So if you look at this figure here, what it shows is that you have the ONAP component and you have the HAL daemon. HAL daemon is a very lightweight service, which is barely 500 lines of code that you can essentially configure to tell how it should perform failure detection. So for example, I'll just share you. This is one example of how in its old state HAL was used. You would simply configure HAL in such a way. For example, let's say potentially MSO is using it, right? MSO wants to use HAL for its failure detection and failover. So it would be expected that you would provide HAL with scripts like this. How do I run a script to ensure that I'm alive? How do I run a script to perform failover? So you just configure these scripts and run the HAL daemon, and then they would simply keep calling these scripts to perform failure detection. And, in case one of the replicas die and somebody has to take over, it would call this code to run them in active mode. I have more information on this, and in fact, I even have a video demo of this to kind of explain how services can simply configure HAL and they can get things like failover for free. So, and that's kind of the answer to some of the questions that have been raised by Jason and Manoj as to, does CHAP interface with DMAP? Does CHAP interface with MSB? The answer is yes, right? You write scripts that tell HAL what it needs to do when it needs to fail over from one component to another component. And in this failover scripts, you can potentially write whatever you want. You can, for example, you can go and say, update DMAP saying that I'm the new owner of these resources, of these requests. Or you can do the same thing with MSB. So that's the way CHAP would interact with these external services through the HAL scripts.
I guess I'm kind of listening to this and wondering if we're going to continue to use a microservice-based approach where microservices are meant to be stateless, scalable, restartable, really kind of divorced from the traditional way of providing AHA. Why? I guess we would need this maybe in the short run, but maybe in the long run, we need to kind of focus on utilizing the cloud native architecture principles and to achieve the same outcome. Don't you think?
So is this Alex? I'm sorry, I can't see the name.
Yes.
Yeah. So Alex, even when we go through a microservice style architecture of statelessness, right? Ultimately, this is enabling that, right? So in this particular design, the service itself does not maintain any state. It's all externalized to music, right? So when you do failover, if anything, we are saying that the state, whatever state is relevant to the service, is already available in a geo-distributed store. So if anything, I would say that this is a stepping stone in that particular direction. A way to externalize.
I would say that the notion of traditional failover doesn't really exist in a cloud native space.
So would you be able to elaborate on that a bit more? So what exactly does it mean? So let's be very concrete here. Right now, MSO uses Komunda, the BPMN engine. The Komunda engine writes to a database and it stores the state of the BPMN process. Now, in such a case, if one of the replica fails, and what happens now in the idealized architecture?
So I guess I'm kind of getting a different perspective today on this than before. Like if you're really trying to remove all the state from the microservices and deposit them into a set of data services, then this makes sense, because you still need to have some shared state replicated across ONAP. But if this is somehow an HE framework that keeps things alive, or you know, kind of restarts them or moves them around, that's kind of what I was getting today from you. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think, like I said, there are two components here. One is what you said, the fact that we are externalizing state to music, and we are making it available to different sites wherever ONAP might be residing through music. That's one part of it. But the other part of it is that some of the components do require some kind of failover protocols. I guess you're talking about a system where if a microservice fails, somebody else can simply take over the job without really needing failover.
Well, you run enough instances to begin with to not have a failure, right? You run three instances, you get five nines. You run maybe two instances. My point is that there are lots of ways to account for nonstop operation other than by doing a failover. There's still a need for it in the geographically distributed cases, but in a lot of more localized situations, you probably don't need it, right?
So, I mean,
I think the point is that there is a difference between the high availability locally and geo-redundancy. I think we should differentiate between them. I agree, Alex. So if you make sure you have enough running instances of a service locally to achieve a certain number of nines, whichever number of nines that you want to get to, then you know that practically, locally, nothing fails ever, because you have enough redundancy. And then the only thing that can happen, so you have to make sure that within the cluster of these instances, they make sure they work together and they can fail over between them. And then the only thing then you will need to worry about is a complete site failure.
And you have a split brain condition and all that, and you have to be able to recover. But and then aside from that, there's the notion of separating the data from the business logic, right? So that's kind of what I meant. Yes, thank you.
Now I do see that. So for example, the HAL daemons, right? Their main functionality is what you said, Alex, is that if an entire site fails, it makes sure that the failover protocols try to ensure that you won't have things like the split brain problems. It does leader election. And the role of music is to ensure that if an entire site fails, then the data or the state is available to the other site. So that's kind of how we look at this role here. Even though I've shown, do you think showing these two replicas within the same site might be confusing? If that's the case, I could just perhaps,
Yes. I think it is confusing because it seems like music is doing both, and I think it shouldn't. It should do one. It should do just the geo-redundancy. That's I think the.
That is fair enough. So would it help if I, for example, just say ONAP local cluster and the HAL daemon, and just have one ONAP local cluster? How the cluster is managed internally is up to them. I won't be music and CHAP will not interfere with that.
There are two problems that I think you're looking to solve in general, right? One is separation of data, right? And kind of decoupling the persistence of data away from the microservices. And that's great. Yes. That's a good use case. The second one is geo-redundancy. I think whatever happens at a local site, you could achieve in much cheaper ways and probably without doing much new code. But geo-redundancy, I agree. We still need to be able to handle all the typical use cases associated with geo-failure.
Yeah, and I think what we want to make sure is that what we don't want to see happen is that one component believes that the site has gone down and moves to another site, whereas the other components are fine. And the site is actually fine and they continue to work there, which means that now SO, for instance, is gonna talk remotely with SDNC or anybody else. Is just as an example, if SDNC decides for whatever reason that the site has gone down and it's going to the other site, but the rest are working on this site. So we don't want
to get on that. One of the important part of the HAL protocol's job is to ensure there are no split brain problems, or you know, at least kind of quantify precisely how to deal with that situation. So if an entire site fails, and let's say you have two choices from her, you know, maybe Amsterdam can take over, or maybe Irvine can take over. We want to make sure that even if Beijing is only suspected dead in this figure, there is only one leader for a particular set of requests. So that's certainly also something that...
I kind of have another question, right? We're talking about ONAP components. If we're going to use Kubernetes for deployment and operation of ONAP going forward using OOM, Kubernetes already provides a means of dealing with the problems that, well, not the data, but certainly handling the geo-redundancy issues. So how do you see the project working with the OOM-driven ONAP?
Okay, so I've had multiple discussions with Roger about this. Now, the way we look at it is, so Kubernetes can do failure detection. You know, it can perhaps say that, well, I declare the Beijing site to be dead right now, so to speak. But at the same time, you still need to do the failover. By failover, I mean there are a certain bunch of scripts that need to be run when somebody else is taking over. You need to make state available to them. So the answer to the question, Alex, is that now HAL also provides its failure detection mechanisms and using Zookeeper, which is kind of similar to what Kubernetes does using etcd, for example. It's in the same technical ballpark. So if people want to use the Kubernetes-based etcd for failure detection, then they can use the HAL daemon simply for failover. But HAL does natively provide its own failover as well. So that's kind of the only overlap that I see between the job done by HAL and the job done by OOM. Does that make sense?
Hey Bharat. Bharat, this Parviz. I'm a bit... not clear about the overlapping part between your approach and the individual project, like SDNC. I guess someone mentioned SDNC. Yoav mentioned. So SDNC today, I guess I heard that Dan earlier, we are going to, in the SDNC team, we are going to zero and actually focus on this roadmap. And one of the key features is how to make it, how to bring the geo-redundancy into the picture, first for the single site and then for multi-site. So Dan can talk about it next week. So how that would overlap, doesn't this overlap with the component level aspects of what you're doing, like failover and blah, blah?
Oh, completely. So in fact, I mean, you're calling it overlap. I'm saying that CHAP's main relevance is at the component level. So for example, for CHAP to be successful, we need to convince SDNC to use CHAP for the failover, for example. And I mean, I don't want to speak for Dan right now, but if I'm not mistaken, even Dan is going to expose some of these music-based ideas when he talks to you. I mean, Dan, maybe we can have this discussion right here. I spoke to Jim
Mount about this. But the question is, should each do their own resiliency, or should we have a common service that all ONAP modules can use? And what you're saying is that
I think we are providing a common service that all ONAP components can use, but I do think it behooves us to go and convince the individual ONAP components to use them. SDNC is our first target, let's put it that way.
Well, I mean, look, so in the name of S3P, you kind of may be able to you know, just, you know, make a convention that we do it a particular way. I guess, you know, whatever we do, let's make sure there's one way, right? Because it gets confusing, right? If we have 20 different ways to keeping data synchronization happening and restarts happening and everything else.
Yeah, but I want to, so Bharat, I just want to again emphasize what I said before. So you can do things on a per component basis, for instance, SDNC, but not a decision to move to another site, right? That is something that we want to make sure is done on a per site basis, on a per ONAP basis. We don't want one component to decide that the site has gone down and move, whereas the others believe that the site is fine and they continue to live there.
But it's a little bit, right? Because we also want to make sure ONAP components are managed in a consistent way and operated in a consistent way.
And won't that be ONAP function to decide how to move, don't move one component at a time, move all the pieces that from data center, but replication facility.
Yeah, I think we talked about this on one of the past calls, that there's a tight linkage between CHAP and OOM.
For site redundancy.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, so I agree with you, Parviz, that, I mean, if OOM can tell us that, you know, you're going to move from this site to another site, then the role of HAL mainly is to ensure that the failover can happen using the scripts that the individual components have given. While OOM can probably tell us which site it's based on failure detection, it can probably tell us which site you should move to, the individual components still need to do some stuff to do that motion, right? And you need state available for that. That is the job that CHAP is providing right now. And I also agree, Alex, that, I mean, ideally we should use a common mechanism. That's one of the main reasons why in our design of CHAP, this MDBC driver that you see, right, that essentially intercepts database calls to the database and copies it over to music. And we try our best. I mean, right now we already support MySQL. We already support H2. We are planning to support, have some community support in extending it to Postgres. So the idea is that at least let the multi-site substrate support different databases so that the cross-site synchronization mechanisms are all uniformly provided by CHAP. That's the goal. So I agree with you. Because if it's all under one umbrella, it becomes much easier to manage and control it.
If I were you, I would split this project into two. I would literally take a knife to it and say, okay, there's one part which has to do with data replication and data persistence and consistency of that, right? And then there's another part where you may want to work under the umbrella of OOM to add additional plugins, functionality, utility libraries, whatever you need to ensure that all components do geo failovers in a consistent way. Because I think they're distinct enough that you know, you may want to focus on the data first, right? Because we need to build a good data abstraction layer that spans multiple sites.
I see.
And we don't have that today, right? And we kind of need it, you know, if we're going to do queries across decentralized environments. And then worry about the replication, because that, or the inter-site failover, because like you have said, you know, for the most part, you know, that problem could today be handled in the meantime by individual components, right? You know, we can live with that for a little bit longer. But without the data layer, I think we're going to be in trouble at some point. So.
Okay. All right, but one clarification. The state management for some components is very critical, and SDNC is one of them, okay?
Yes.
The same thing doesn't, hold on, the same thing doesn't apply to, let's say, SO. SO probably is not, first of all, the design for SO started from being like a stateless entity, correct? Except for some operational state. So the common approach that you are working on, that common approach doesn't really have to address just the weakest component in this architecture.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm suggesting that we're always going to have shared state and operational state, configuration state, policies, whatnot, that needs to be replicated across site for consistency of operation, right? And some of that is going to be tied to the external model that we expose, because we want to be able to, you know, have a more or less a mesh approach to accessing ONAP. There will be other reasons for us to do that consistency. But, and then to me, that's an important piece to start on and to get done, right? Because we also need to be able to do queries across sites for operational purposes. And so having one kind of data abstraction layer with different persistence backing stores would be useful. You're right. So, individual components can store their state there or not, but over time, hopefully they all will.
Okay, so let's...
Can I, sorry. I'm sorry, Chris.
Go ahead.
No, so I was trying to understand, is it really necessary to split it up into two projects? Would it help, for example, if I just say in the functionality, I split it up into, say, data layer functionality and consistent failover functionality. And in the data layer, just to make things a bit more, because they're all...
I'll give you an example why it might be important to separate. For the local redundancy and local failover between, you know, within a cluster of each component, you're proposing HAL, and it might be a good proposal. I think if HAL is going to run on a different VM, then there's always going to the question is going to be what if that VM goes down. So I think you probably want to have HAL be kind of a module that a piece of software that each module would have to run in their own VM, so that we know that its fate is, it goes together with the component.
It's kind of like
I'm going to step in here. Let me step in. We're going to have to move on. I'm going to take the last word on this one. Bharath, I know you're looking for volunteers, and Alex and Yoav, I hear some interest, so maybe you can work on this offline. In terms of the TSC proposal, if it's the same group that's doing the work, put it together as one proposal, but you can identify it as separate components that can be used for different things because they are interrelated. They just can be used differently. That's my two cents. So we do need to move on now. We have a presentation from Lee Breslau from AT&T about operations requirements for ONAP.
Thanks. So was that Chris?
Yes.
I'm not sure. Did you have other, how much time did I take? Can I take?
I can give you to the top of the hour.
Okay. I mean, that's probably more than I need.
Bharath, can you drop your screen?
I'm just trying to understand how to do that. I'm sorry.
Up in the sharing, and then click on the stop sharing.
Yeah. Leave meeting option.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks.
I think I'm sharing. Can folks see this deck I have?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So thanks, Chris, for the opportunity to present this material. Just as some background, I'm with AT&T, and I was was asked to get together a group of some folks internally to review the carrier grade requirements that were on the wiki, and to sort of understand from AT&T's perspective, how we looked at these, did they, were they in line with what we need? And you know, do we have any suggestions or feedback? So we I did that with a bunch of folks, I think some of whom are on this call, and pulled together this sort of our collective view. We were, you know, not unanimous, but I think we generally aligned, and shared that with other folks internally to get, you know, more feedback. And so I asked Chris to do was the opportunity to present this today, just to share our feedback. With that, I mean, the high-level summary, there's nothing earth-shattering or really that shocking here. You know, when we took a look, the carrier grade requirements that were on the wiki seemed in line with what the folks that we had, which I guess I should say it was a representative folks across operations teams, development teams, system engineering teams. So we wanted to get a sort of a broad sense of, you know, make sure we were covering different angles. So the requirements on the wiki seemed in line with what, you know, we generally thought were important for AT&T. Again, that's not surprising. And, you know, and I think probably the requirements for any large carrier are likely to be fairly common. And so, you know, again, I think what we're doing was largely due diligence and just wanted to make sure. You know, we did have some, and I'll walk through it, we did have some specific feedback on some areas where we might have prioritized a little bit differently in a specific category we wanted to call out on its own right. And I guess the bottom point here is, you know, everything that was on the wiki is, important and would be good to have, but, you know, we realize that resources are finite. And so, you know, some we viewed as more important than others. And so I think amongst the categories that were identified, it was the resiliency, security, manageability that we thought were the most critical. And I guess from our standpoint, hoping that you know, the definite advances will be made in those areas. So what I have here is basically a summary table that steps through each of the categories that were on the wiki and, you know, talks about what we see as the level of priority for them. Again, these are relative priorities. I don't want to leave the impression that things that are low priority are unimportant. You know, so maybe the way to think about this is, you know, high, higher, and highest or something. You know, what we thought was on the wiki identified for each area, there were, you know, levels of functionality identified, and we kind of identified what we thought were the target levels that were important. And then we got some notes. And I can walk through with each of these in the subsequent slide what we came up with. But so the, you know, I guess what I captured here again are the ones that identified as most critical on the prior slide. Any questions or comments before I go any further? Okay. If not, I'll spend my time doing, and I don't, you know, is just kind of stepping through each one of these categories and highlighting anything that I think might be of interest or important to share. So there was a category of performance that I think captured, how to test to characterize performance. You know, again, not unimportant, but relative to others, this wasn't one of the categories we thought was most critical. And I think the high level comment here is for things like service instantiation, you know, again, relatively speaking, didn't think these are going to be, you know, is what ONAP's not going to be doing this at such a high rate as to put, you know, load on any system. So we, you know, that wasn't not a significant area of concern. The one caveat though is, you know, service assurance functions are going to be more performance if, you know, you're collecting fault performance data that you're going to want to take closed loop actions on timely delivery and in capacity to deliver is going to be important. So I guess the one area where, you know, if we could drill in a little more that we'd say would be more important would be for DCAE for something like this to make sure you've got the capability to carry high loads of performance data. Stability, this was about, I think, you know, doing some soak testing to make sure the platform's stable. Again, relatively, we categorize this one as a medium importance item. And I guess the platform testing, I mean, I guess the feedback we give is platform testing in our experience is important. You know, we need more than just performance testing and the test that ought to cover key flows, you know, as much as possible, exercise as much of the system, and just a varied and concurrent activity, you know, the more of that you can build into your test, the more likely you're going to identify or going to discover problems or interactions between different flows or components that might happen. And then the final comment, and you know, our experience for this kind of testing, you know, something like random delays within a flow could be helpful in order to test robustness of the end-to-end flows to delay.
So this is Margaret. I just have a question.
Sure.
Do you view rainy day scenarios as part of stability testing?
So, you know, certainly testing rainy day scenarios is good and important. I mean, I guess from, you know, we just looked at this as there's going to be stages of this. And, you know, even the kind of level of testing right here, this, you know, I think would be really good and helpful.
Right. So I'm sorry. I still don't. So do you see it as part of stability? And then if so, which level, or you don't see it?
That's a good question. I'm not sure we really didn't come up in our discussions per se. So,
because okay. You know, the comment people always make is when you build a product, 90% of the effort is on rainy day, right? Situation.
Right. Right.
You get to be, when you're a carrier, you will hit all of them.
Sure. Sure. Good comment.
Just a question on this, Lee.
Yep.
So, actually two questions I have. One is, you say per component, for instance, component level, if the component is clustered, then it is for the whole cluster, right? So if one VM goes down there, you wouldn't care as long as the component is working.
Sure. Yes.
Okay. The other question I have is actually maybe more to Helen. Helen, are you still online?
Yes, I am, sir.
Helen, I just wonder, in Amsterdam, what do you think we are? And I'm just wondering if we would need to have something between 0 and 1, because maybe we're not at 72 hour, but we're better than 0. So I wonder if you have any idea where we are.
Actually, regarding stability point of view, we are pretty stable. Like I saw a couple instances with runs in weeks, and then they didn't crash. Of course, we don't have any random transaction happening. So I think we're just somewhere.
You're just letting it sit, right? You're not doing anything with it.
Yes. So for the in our integration lab, but the same CSS lab, we actually did a very intensive testing for 2 weeks. So we do a lot of testing, doing surveys, all those kind of stuff. After 1 week, we run into a problem: is we run out of storage because so many log stuff generated. So it crashed the system because we run out of resource. So definitely we have more things to do, but for stability point of view, we are seems okay.
Yeah, and I think this will evolve because not just the random transaction, but we also want to make sure that we are getting a good code coverage to make sure that we extract at least 70% of the code from each module. And that only can come over time. We can't just have one day one to have test cases covering everything.
Yeah, we need to have some kind of sense, kind of like we are designing some sense. For example, we'll create a lot of use, lots of WinFs, a very small one. We're doing some kind of random sense, let it automate it to see what's going on. For example, 72 hours. So that intensity will definitely today, because automated, will definitely more than human beings' interaction. So we'll see what we get there. We were still trying to look in for tools, platform to do all those kind of things.
Okay. No, thank you. But it's actually good news. And I'm glad to hear. I was under the impression that it was
for me, the pageant radius beside those things, to me is the most important thing. So we wanted to increase the automation. why not so many, too many manual steps? Well, that's a different story. I stop here.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to move on then, I think. Resiliency, which I joined your meeting late, I gather you were having a discussion about this. Again, a high priority item from our standpoint, and with being able to we automated detection and recovery with single site within a single site, and you know, as the sort of most important priority, and eventually, of course, want geographic redundancy. And so I'm not sure there's more to say on that one. Security also high priority, and I think from our standpoint, something that came up with our continually with our operations folks is role-based access control to all APIs as being critical. In addition, an audit trail is important. And then other comments we had is that the importance of having a patching strategy, and that you know our security folks thought that you know penetration testing within ONAP would be a good thing to have as well.
Well, sorry, just a question there. On the patching strategy, what was it that you meant?
If there are a way to do OS patches for security vulnerabilities.
Because there is a vulnerability management process in place where someone can send in. If someone discovers a security flaw somewhere, and they can submit that, and there's a process for following that through under embargo until the CVE is released. That's actually in place. It hasn't been exercised yet, but it's in place.
Okay.
I'm sure we'll be exercised soon.
Yep. Good. Thank you. Scalability, I guess every time I put up priority low, I feel like I need to say it doesn't mean we don't care about it. But in terms of the immediate roadmap of what's most high priority, this wasn't a feeling that this was most important. I guess we expect at least in our near term to be able to have enough handle of load and what the system has to do to be able to do without that coming from the platform automatically. But again, we do like it, but just if it comes down to a question of resources and priorities, this isn't one that AT&T would think would be a high priority. And then comments though, just the comment we had was that if there is scaling, we need to make sure it's transparent to users or to clients of the APIs or microservices. Manageability again is a high priority one, and this is one where when we looked at the wiki, I think our consensus was we might have defined the levels a little bit differently. I think on the wiki it had a single logging system across components, and then in level one, and then the ability and then tracing across components in level two. And I guess from our operations team, when their experience in the importance of being able to trace flows end to end across the system, we would have, I think as I've noticed it down here, as I described, what would have been our proposed level one is to include the transaction tracing across components. And I guess just in terms of relative importance, the way it was here on the wiki is to say was given instantiation of the platform in less than an hour as, more important than tracing across components. And I really think from our standpoint of a, lifecycle support of the platform, we would have flipped those and said, we'd rather have tracing across components and we could give somewhat on the instantiation. Not that there's a direct trade-off between those two, that it's an either or, but in terms of, the relative value and importance we see of that feature. Automated, fully automated deployment is an important part of this, and the desire to be able to upgrade components in a hitless fashion. Does that feedback on this slide make sense? Does that folks follow what I'm saying?
Yes, thank you.
The one question is transaction tracing across different components.
Yeah.
Do we have the necessary tools to support that? Implement that?
I'm not quite sure I understand the question, but the answer is yes, I believe. I mean, so there is a, there's actually an ONAP logging project.
Logging, no. That is okay. But yeah, you're saying the level one.
Yeah, level zero is okay. It's not just logging, but logging and tracing and logging using the transaction ID so that you can look at all that is for that transaction.
Yeah, and the ONAP logging project is the folks I think are working on exactly the tools to, assuming you have logs with a transaction with a common ID to then develop the tools to then piece together these end-to-end transactions and tools to be able to visualize and explore and so forth.
This is in R2. We are at level one, could be, level two.
Well, we're going to have to check on a per project basis. Some will be further along than others. This is a level of importance, and this is really good feedback from the operations team.
Yeah, this is great.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of it's probably, this is really, without the tracing across components, it's going to be, it's hard for the production support team to really troubleshoot, debug, localize problems. So this would be hugely valuable.
So, Chris, I had a question on scalability. If you have time, the previous slide.
We're getting close to the end.
Okay, that's fine.
Why don't we let Lee keep going here, and then if you have further questions on scalability, take them up through email.
Okay, sure.
Okay. Any more questions on this slide? If not, so. This is, we kind of, pulled the configuration management was not on the wiki explicitly, and, kind of folks on our team thought this ought to be, could be pulled out and identified separately. And again, based on experience trying to, deploy and manage, across multiple environments internally. And so it's, this is really, and it's really about that, when you have to support an instance of a platform like this in, different test environments and in production environment, you need to give, the teams that own those environments need to have the ability to change environment specific variables and redeploy quickly. That's an item that we wanted to call out.
Great. Thanks.
Okay. And then I guess the final one, there was from the wiki, there was a usability category that didn't have a lot of information in it, but what our folks thought would be useful was a user guide, a description of what they need to do really to deploy the system and documentation for documentation of APIs. So that's sort of the quick summary of where we came to. And again, just to get back to the beginning, I think most of the things or just about everything here made a lot of sense to us. And we just applied our collective experience to, to make some determination about relative priority, which was kind of hard because we were sort of had to be careful not to, we took some discipline not to call everything high priority because it is all important. And there were the few items, and particularly the logging traceability that we wanted to call out. So that's all I had. Thanks very much, Chris, for the time and everyone for the attention.
Thank you. I appreciate your insights. And Lee, have you had a chance to post these on the wiki?
No, I haven't.
Okay. If you send them to me, I'll post them later today when I take care of the recording.
Okay. Super.
Great, thank you.
Yeah.
Any final questions or comments from the team?
No, just, yeah, maybe one actually. So we've got this feedback. I think that's great. Do we have to, I mean, should we sort of look at the carrier grade, the S3P requirements we put in there to make sort of adjustments or take this to Jason or what should we do with it, the information now?
Yeah, Jason has seen this through his sub-team, the system architecture sub-team, he's looking at how this might be reflected in the levels. But we thought it would be important to share with the whole team. If anyone else has feedback or input to share with Jason. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll circle back around. Jason wasn't able to make it on this call, but he is aware of this discussion and all the material. That's basically where it goes back into the sub-team for further processing, and then we'll share that with the developers so that everybody can prioritize appropriately in their projects for middle of January for M1. Great.
Thanks, Chris.
Sure. So with that, we are about at the top of the hour, so I will let everybody go. Thanks for a productive discussion today. I will post the recording when it's available later today, and I will see many of you next week in Santa Clara. Thanks.
Yep, thank you. Have a sip, Charles.
Thank you. Bye.
You too. Thank you. Bye.